presentation on a chair up in front if you'd like a copy of that. They are not in large print, but I can make them available in large print and braille and text and audio and whatever you need. Just let me know and I'm more than happy to do that.
And you can either use the mouse or just the...
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so I'm talking to you today about something we've developed called PEONIES, which is an approach to integrated, person-centered, outcomes-driven, long-term care planning and quality assurance. I have no significant relationships of relevance to disclose here, and I do want to acknowledge my co-investigator, Barbara Bowers, our team members, Kay Hutchison, Donna Kopp, Kim Nolet, and Brenda Ryther, Karen McKim and Sharon Ryan from the Department of Health and Family Services in Wisconsin, for whom we developed this approach, and the many stakeholders, including all kinds of consumers, people with all types of disabilities, some family members, care managers, quality reviewers, and policymakers in the state, all of whom really had a huge impact on shaping how this developed. I'm actually going to skip over the background because I have a lot to cover and more than we have time for. But basically what I want to say is this came about because within Wisconsin, as in many other states, I think, there are a number of different approaches to measuring quality of long-term care programs. In Wisconsin, these programs differ by the disability of the individual, by their age group, by the place in the state in which they're residing. And so we did a study a few years back for the state and found that all these different approaches to measuring quality had similar themes but also similar problems. And I will say that Wisconsin is really to be applauded in their frequent comment that what they are purchasing is not services, they are purchasing outcomes. And while they agree that health and functional outcomes are important, their primary focus really is on quality of life. So based on our review of these other quality measurement systems in use in the state and other parts of the country, these were the 12 areas which the state has labeled personal experience outcomes, we call them PEOs, and the important thing to see here is that each of these is an I statement, a first-person statement. I decide where and with whom I live. I make decisions. It's not about somebody else determining what's important to the individual. And so what we did for the state was develop what we've called PEONIES. This is the Personal Experience Outcomes Integrated Interview and Evaluation System, which is an approach to identifying what's important to each individual in each of these 12 areas. Are they achieving what they want to achieve? Are they getting the supports and services that they need to help them have the kinds of life experiences and outcomes and achieve the goals that they have for themselves? What's unique about this is that the outcomes are defined by the individual. In most other systems, you have something that's really defined by the system itself. So you answer yes or no to a series of questions, and bingo, the answer pops up that yes, you are living where and with whom you choose. Or yes, you are being treated with respect because people call you the name that you like and they knock on your door before entering your room. What this is about is saying to the person, what do these things mean to you? So each person has their own outcome. It's within the area I decide where and with whom I live. Your outcome might be, I want to get an apartment with my cousin Joe downtown. Or I want to keep living in this group home, but I want a different roommate. Or I want to retire to Florida. It's up to the individual. We use a single approach to identifying what the individual wants and using it to measure quality across populations and across programs. It's a single system that can be used regardless of the type of program a person's enrolled in or the reason that they're getting services. It's used both for quality review and for care planning. For care planning, it really facilitates a very individualized approach by figuring out with the individual what they want for their own life, and then taking that information and using it in measurement in a standardized, reliable way that can generate measures that can be used for continuous quality improvement. These are just the tasks, a basic list of what we did. What we came up with then was what we called essential tools, a toolbox, reports, training, and a manual. I'll talk about the first three in a little bit of depth. The training really cannot be overestimated in terms of importance, and we've done a lot of work developing some very good trainings, I think, and continually revising them as well. This is an ongoing learning process, but I won't talk much about those today. And the manual is a very lengthy manual that goes through why are we doing this, what does this all mean, what are the tools, how do you use them, how can you use the information, and a variety of supports. The essential tools start off with what we've called the pre-interview checklist. And this is something that we hadn't planned on developing, but input from our stakeholders led us to this. We had consumers who said to us, people come to talk to me in my home and they don't respect me, they don't call me the name I want, I have a sign by my front door saying remove your shoes and they don't, or my care manager comes in smelling like smoke and I've told her that makes me sick, and the next time she shows up, I'm just not going to let her in the door if she smells like smoke. And we had interviewers, care managers, and quality reviewers saying to us, you know, we go into people's homes to talk to them, and there are things we just need to know so we can do a good interview. We need to know, are there going to be other people present? We need to know, does the person need some type of communication assistance? So we came up with a very simple form. It's one page, double-sided, that collects this kind of really essential information that helps make sure interviews are done well and remove some of the barriers before people ever get face-to-face. We have a simple set of instructions. Most people, once they've done a couple interviews, probably don't look at the instructions, but they're important because this is a different approach, and it's a useful reminder to people to be able to refer back to something that says, this is why you're doing this. This is what you need to get out of this interview. It's not like other things you've done. The Consumer's Interview Guide is something that we developed through our reliability testing process because we found it was really helpful to give people we were interviewing a listing of these 12 PEO areas before we ever started the interview. So we give them one page in large print that says, these are the 12 areas we're going to be talking about today, and we want to know what's important to you about each of these areas and what help you need to achieve the things that are important to you. This is really empowering to consumers because otherwise, all the power is in the hands of the person doing the interview to say, now I'm going to talk to you about this and now I'm going to talk to you about that, and the person being interviewed has no idea what's coming next. It's also really helpful because some people can't make it through the full interview. The interviews take, on average, an hour, hour and 10 minutes, thereabouts. Some people don't have the stamina for that. Some people have other things that just mean they don't have the time available on a given day. If they know in advance, these are the 12 areas we want to talk about, the person's empowered to look at them and say, these are the three areas I want to talk about that are most important to me at this time in my life. And if we don't have time to talk about all 12 areas, this is what I want to talk to you about. We have a number of interview tools that we've developed in a variety of ways based on what people said they needed to support them to do good interviews, based on their level of experience, based on their level of knowledge. We have a variety of tools that can be used if you're working with people with different types of disabilities and people living in different types of situations. You ask different questions, you have a different situation if someone's living alone than if they're living in some sort of congregate care setting. But for the most part, people are using the summary worksheet, which is a data collection instrument, and we've ended up making that sort of a combination of data collection and interview guide because interviewers said, just minimize the amount of paper you're giving us. And since they must complete the summary worksheet with the individual, we've made that into an interview guide that seems to be working quite well right now. The toolbox, these are things that are not essential, but that are available to interviewers to help support them in doing good interviews. We have a number of tip sheets that are one-page sheets of just bulleted points for each of these various issues. So if you're going in to interview somebody with dementia, here's a one-page sheet you can pull out that says, when interviewing someone with dementia, here are some issues that may affect the quality of the interview. Here are some strategies for conducting a more effective interview. And here are some resources for more information if you want it. It's just a really simple tool to support people in doing a good quality interview. The table of common challenges gets at more basics of interviewing, acquiescent response bias, dealing with distraction in the environment. These are things that can occur across populations, and it's a very simple summary of what are the issues and what are strategies for dealing with it. The manual also includes a lengthy chapter that goes into much more detail about these challenges. This is an example of our summary worksheet. This is in the area I decide where and with whom I live. Up top, there are a list of questions in bulleted format. These are questions that are not phrased to be asked to the individual that the person is interviewing. We found if we gave people questions framed that way, that inexperienced interviewers only ask those questions in those words. That doesn't work, folks. This is about talking to people in ways that connect to them, that get at what's important to them. You cannot ask a standard set of questions. That defeats the whole purpose. So these bulleted points are questions to the interviewer to say, can you answer these questions? By the time you're through talking to the person, are you able to know if the person is living where he or she wants, if the person is living with whom he or she wants? How you get that information is up to your skill as an interviewer. We do have a few suggested opening questions because that seems to get people off the mark, you know, get them off to a good start, and that's really helpful. We have a space here for notes. And then our data collection is this long bar down at the bottom. Over to the left, it starts out with personal experience outcome, entering the outcome identified by the person and confirmed with the consumer in the consumer's own words. Confirming is really important. So you may talk to a person, decide the person is living where he or she wants. You do not write down, person is living where he wants. You write down in the person's words, I want to stay here until the day I die, or whatever it is the person said, and you confirm it with the person to say, what I heard you say is, I want to live here until the day I die. Is that right? That's, again, empowering to the person. It's really important to people that you get their words. And we've seen people wordsmith this to death because it's important to them. Then we have a space to indicate, is the outcome being achieved? In some cases, things are being achieved. The person's living where he wants, and he wants to continue living there. In some cases, it's not achieved. I want to retire to Florida. You know, I want to downsize to a smaller place. So is it achieved currently or not? And then we have some check boxes to check if it's not achieved, why not? And we added these because care managers said, I don't want to record that someone's not achieving an outcome that they want. That makes me look bad because my job is to help people achieve the things they want in their lives. And we said, well, yes, but not always. Your goal is to help people get there. If everybody's achieving their outcomes all the time, 100%, you're doing something wrong because you aren't really learning what people want. Because all of us want different things at different points in our life. So I may want to live where I'm living right now, and 2 years from now, I may want to move somewhere else. And there's always change and growth. That's the human condition. The next section is listing the help needed to achieve or maintain the desired outcome. This includes formal and informal supports. Services and action steps, again, from the individual's perspective. And then we note, are these things currently in place, or is it something we're working on finding a resource for? And from the individual's perspective, if these things are in place, are they adequate? Are they getting enough of what they want, or too much of something that they don't want? Is it acceptable? Are they getting services in a way that's respectful, that's comfortable, that's dignified, that's what they want from their lives? Again, this is all from the individual's perspective. And you can see where this feeds into care planning. But it also then can be reduced down to some aggregate measures to create quality reports that can show whether people are identifying outcomes. Not everyone has an outcome in every area at any point in time. That's fine. Some people have more than one outcome in a given area. So we can look at all of that, and we can track then what percent of the outcomes people have identified currently are being achieved, what percent currently are being supported. We can do that for a care organization, and we can do it across units. So we can compare different care organizations, different regions of the state. Within an organization, we can compare different units. We're moving in Wisconsin to regional managed long-term care systems, so we can look at the different counties in the region and compare their performance. We can look within an organization and compare care managers. Are they all performing equally well? This is not an easy process. Interviewers have some difficulty in understanding what these outcome areas are all about. They're used to being told, this is what it means, answer yes to these six questions. So we need a lot of training to help them understand the breadth of issues that can fall within each of these outcome areas. And some interviewers, despite what they think, have poor interviewing skills. Or there may be good interviewers. They say, we're care managers. We talk to people day in and day out. Well, yeah, but are you talking about what they want? And it's a real shift in focus, and it takes work to translate those skills to that new approach. The strengths of this is, first of all, consumer engagement. Consumers have been involved from day one in developing this, and in testing this, and in helping us implement this, and they are excited by this. They see an end to the cookie-cutter approach that's been used in the past, where if you have the following disabilities at a particular level, bingo, you get X hours of personal care so many days a week, and Y hours of support of home care so many days a week, to saying, no, this is about what do you want, and how are we going to support that? This has tremendous support from the stakeholders, the professional stakeholders throughout the state. They are excited about this. Everybody's really excited by the improved focus on quality of life. We've completed development and reliability testing. There's a poster session tomorrow, 4141, where you can get more information about that. And we're now testing the validity of measures based on external quality review, because the state wants to use this as part of their external quality review process for the managed care programs. In the future, we will be completing the validation work. We'll be implementing this in some of the managed long-term care programs for use in care planning. We're working on training interviewers. It takes rigorous training. It takes ongoing support to make sure people really learn this and are trained in ways that assure inter-rater reliability. We're working now to modify this. It doesn't need a lot of modification, but a little bit, for use in nursing homes, and testing it there. The state's very interested in using this approach in nursing homes as part of its quality report cards and potentially pay for performance. We're working with consumers to train them on what this means, to really put the power back in their hands so they understand that they have a right and a tool and a mandate from the state to ask for what they want that gives them meaning in their lives. And we would be more than happy to expand this beyond Wisconsin. And for more information, give me a call. As I said, there are handouts up front here that has that information, and of course, in your program books from this conference. Thank you. It can be used in two ways. It can be used by the care managers for that purpose, and it also can be used by quality reviewers who are hired by the state, who come in from outside the organization and interview people.
Okay, so if you did a payment kind of thing, mm-hmm. it would be people from outside. I was thinking, wait a minute, you're going to have people rating, you know, have people biased because they're doing the interviews and their salary depends on it.
Right.
So you're not going to.
No, although, personally, what I would like to see would be some combination of that, because when you have someone come in from outside, first of all, they don't know the people, and it's a once-a-year shot in time. If it's used by care managers on an ongoing basis, we can measure over time. What I'd recommend is the ability to report the data back to the state on an ongoing basis. You have it for the whole population rather than a sample, which is all the external reviewers interview. And then it can be used by the external reviewers in a survey process, much as is done currently with home health or nursing homes, where they can come in once a year then say, okay, here's the data you reported to us, here's what it shows, we're going to make sure that this is really accurate, we'll pull a sample, and then we'll check for accuracy and review this, and we can confirm the validity and reliability of the data and use it to help us identify any systems level problems. And so could use it that way for pay for performance. But there'd be some sort of auditing function.
Hi, I'm on the Quality Council for the Developmental Disabilities Program in Montana, and it comes up continually that we have a similar kind of interview process, and I think this has some areas for us to go in terms of improvement, but the issue that comes up is that the people first chapters really want to be involved in the interview process, and it brings up a whole other set of challenges bias, but I wondered if you guys had considered actual consumers as the interviewer and your thoughts on that.
We haven't looked to the consumers as interviewers because this is being used, first and foremost, the state wants to implement it for the external quality review, and they contract with a company. They have a long-standing contract with an organization called MediStar, which is the state's quality improvement organization, to do that. And then because it's being used by the care managers. But a number of people from People First have been involved very definitely with this. And what I am hoping to do with them is a couple of things. One is to develop trainings that they would take out and train other consumers on what does this mean to you? You know, how can you start thinking about the quality of life issues and talk with your care managers about what you want? And I'd also like to develop a process for training the interviewers and having the consumers be part of that training and actually certify that interviewers are doing an adequate quality job. So those are ways that we've talked about having them involved. I know the Ask Me program in Maryland uses consumers as interviewers of each other. Any other questions? Thank you.